Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you, as always. And, Jim, the good martini has been a long time in coming. In fact, just about 8 months in coming. It was September 11th, 2012, when the terrorist attack happened against the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, killing four Americans, including the U.S. ambassador. Answers have been very slow in coming. In fact, the only answers that have been given have been pretty much known to be untruthful and, for the most part, from the get-go. Finally, now the House Oversight Government Reform Committee is going to be holding hearings this week. We know of a couple of the whistleblowers who will be testifying, one of which is the next highest ranking guy after Chris Stevens in Benghazi, and that was Gregory Hicks, the deputy chief of mission. Another one is counterterrorism officer Mark Thompson. Yesterday on Fox News Sunday, Utah Congressman Jason Chaffetz talking about how important this is in the hearing this week to finally get some answers onto what really happened.
What will they add to our understanding of the attack? And is anyone else going to come forward either Wednesday or later?
Well, we've had other people come forward, and I think you'll see other hearings as well. But these two gentlemen are in a unique position. Mr. Hicks became the chief of mission when Ambassador Stevens went missing. He has a unique insight. When I went to Libya about three and a half weeks after, I was able to talk to him. I think he's patriotic. He's not partisan. I think he was being suppressed a little bit, and we need to hear from him exactly what happened and didn't happen that night. He was the chief of mission in Libya when this went down.
Jim, it's been way too long, but at least we're going to get some answers, it sounds like.
Yeah, and it feels like we really have had some sort of like log jam has just been disrupted or burst, because we've had the release of the FBI photos of three of the assailants, and kind of a, you know, these are persons of interest in the attack. We've had CNN reporting that there is now strong evidence that Al-Qaeda was involved. These are not just some yokels on the street, that they were Al-Qaeda operatives who were involved in this. You have the deputy chief of mission coming forward and saying that they believe it was a terror attack from the very beginning, and basically saying he was not consulted in the days after this attack, which is kind of very strange and inexplicable. His report that the State Department's internal review, he was not spoken to, and he believes it was designed to protect the higher-up officials there. And now, I mean, in some of these other places, like Fox News has reported that the State Department Inspector General is looking at that internal review and looking at why they have, you know, certain folks who are considered experts and folks who are on the ground weren't interviewed for that internal review, suggesting that even their Inspector General sees a cover-up going on here. And then finally, Fox News had some unidentified source that said, yes, there were military options on the ground to at least launch a rescue operation or some sort of effort to help those guys on the ground in Benghazi that was not used. So other than that, the administration story checks out, Greg. You know, those five or six details. Now, I understand our former Secretary of State. Well, at this point, what difference does it make? But look, I think this, you know, this makes a very big deal. And it suggests that, you know, all three of the suspicions of a lot of folks on the right, but I think, you know, even a lot of folks in the center check out here, which is that, one, there was kind of this blithe dismissal of requests for additional security from folks on the ground. Then there's the second issue of what happened that night. Was there efforts that could have been made that were not made out of fear of political risk or fear of a Black Hawk Down type scenario or something? But the whole claim, oh, there's nothing we could have done, really does seem like, you know, after the fact excuse making as opposed to that, and people kind of, you know, trying to cover their rear. And then the third aspect is the changing of the talking points and the explanation of, well, it was this protest over a film. Think about it. Obama was still talking about the film 10 days later when he spoke to the UN. A really fun question to come out of this will then be, all right, was any political pressure applied on the U.S. attorney who ended up prosecuting the YouTube filmmaker if, in fact, the Benghazi attack, it is now clear, had little or nothing to do with that YouTube film? So in the end, Candy Crowley should hang her head in shame. And it turns out that it appears that almost all of the suspicions about what happened in Benghazi, we now have some more additional supporting evidence for. And the entire line, this was a partisan witch hunt. Anybody who said that should go hang their head in shame in the corner, because they have turned out to be, you know, very easy and gullible patsies for this. It looks like we might get some real answers this week, and hopefully a very dramatic set of hearings on Capitol Hill this week.
Jim, media prediction, ignore or demonize?
I think you'll see a bit of a split here, because as I noted, you know, you've had the folks like Jake Tapper and a couple other folks, you know, beyond the usual suspects, beginning to write about this as if it's a serious story. I think, you know, there are enough people who have come to the conclusion of realizing that there's something really going on here. Now, the question is, do they then start, you know, saying, well, the president just didn't know? Who turns into the fall guy on this? And the intriguing thing here is that now the interests of President Obama and Hillary Clinton are quite different. That Barack Obama has a real interest in saying, well, really, this, you know, the buck stops with Hillary. And obviously Hillary's only excuse in all this circumstance is say, look, I can only do as much as the president would allow me. So with any luck, we could get that, you know, the Hillary versus Obama shutdown there. I guess it comes down to whether the interest of the press corps is to defend the current administration or to defend the future carrier of the torch for Democrats, since it now looks pretty clear that at least it went much higher up the line in the decision-making process than we were originally told.
On to Martini number two now. Once again, Obamacare is rearing its ugly head, and the statistics are not good. This from Investors Business Daily. Quote, retailers are cutting worker hours at a rate not seen in more than three decades, a sudden shift that can only be explained by the onset of Obamacare's employer mandates. Non-supervisory employees logged an average of 30 hours per week in April, the shortest retail work week since early 2010. The reversal does not appear related to the economy, says IBD, which has been consistently mediocre. Instead, all evidence points to the coming launch of Obamacare, which the retail industry warned would cause just such a result. It's because you get these fines if folks are forced onto the exchanges and benefits are not offered by their employers, so then they make them part-time and they don't have to do it. And so we're not only seeing this in the retail sector, Jim, but IBD points out that when you look at the recent jobs reports, temporary jobs rose by 30,800 in April and 83,800 over the last 3 months. So when we're getting these slightly better jobs reports, we're not hearing the whole story here because a lot of these people are only working part-time, which is clearly what most of them don't want to be doing.
Yeah. If temp jobs and part-time jobs are what, you know, how you define a thriving economy, then I guess you can be pretty happy with what we're seeing these days. I think most people would say, look, you never really, you know, get ahead in a circumstance like that, or it's very difficult to get ahead like that. There's an interesting debate in the Wall Street Journal late last week, and they're pointing out that, look, you know, for under Obamacare, if you work 30 hours or more, you're considered a full-time employer for the, you know, their calculations of, do you have to supply health insurance to your employees, and if, you know, how much can you, do you have to cover, and do you have to pay fines if you don't cover, if you don't provide health insurance and things like that. So in that case, most employers were having, you know, people work 29 hours or less. Now, if you're a, you know, trying to get ahead, this means you need to find two jobs with compatible schedules that work, you know, 20 some hours a week, which may or may not be workable. My guess is in this economy, it's still going to be pretty tough to find jobs in that, you know, that'll be where you can work, you know, one shift at one place, another shift another place, and enough time to get from one job to another and circumstances like that. So the Wall Street Journal was arguing you should really make the definition of a full-time employee 40 hours a week, kind of the what always had been the traditional standard. At that case, you probably have employees raising people to like 35 hours a week or maybe even cheating right up to get to 39 hours a week. So you'd have roughly the same amount of hours as a full-time employee. You wouldn't have to have your health insurance covered and other, you know, expenses put upon the employer. I'm not sure that's a really huge improvement, but it does kind of say one of the unintended consequences of this law, which is that whatever level you set as the full-time employee, a lot of employers are going to try to keep people, their part-time employees, right up to that level. So as a result of that, a lot of people who, you know, might ordinarily be working 30-some hours a week are now working 20-some hours a week or sometimes even less, and that makes it much tougher for them to, you know, put together the standard 40-some hours that people work in a week and, you know, be able to make enough money to pay their bills.
On to Martini number three now, Jim, and I don't know if you consider yourself really Irish since, you know, you don't belong to a union. I don't speak Greek, so maybe I'm not a real Greek. Ted Cruz apparently is not a real Hispanic in the mind of Bill Richardson, the former New Mexico governor and holder of other jobs such as congressman, UN ambassador, and so forth. He was a guest on what I guess is the web version of This Week with George Stephanopoulos. Stephanopoulos wasn't actually the one interviewing him, and so they were taking Twitter questions, and one of them was, what do you think of Ted Cruz? And to no surprise, he says, I'm not a big fan. I think he's kind of belligerent against other senators and so forth. But then the follow-up question is this, and check out Richardson's response.
Do you think he represents most Hispanics?
No.
With his politics?
No. He's anti-immigration. Almost every Hispanic in the country wants to see immigration reform. No, I don't think he should be defined as a Hispanic. He's a politician from Texas, a conservative state, and I respect Texas's choice. But what I don't like is when you try to get things done, it's okay to be strong and state your views, your ideology. But I've seen him demean the office, be rude to other senators.
Jim, if he had just stopped that, I don't think he speaks for most Hispanics, I guess that would have been probably fine. But to say he's not really a Hispanic because he's a conservative from Texas who doesn't support the Gang of Eight bill, I'm glad Bill Richardson gets to decide who is and who isn't a Hispanic.
So much horse fucky in that statement, and so little time to dissect it. I guess the first thing, Ramesh Panuru had noted earlier this week, you can make an argument that's a terrible question to ask, because I don't think you'd ever say, you know, Greg, do you think Mitch McConnell speaks for most white people? Do you think Mike Dukakis speaks for most Greek America? I mean, the idea that somehow some, you know, like Ted Cruz was elected to represent Texas, and as a result, his job is to represent Texas, not to represent Hispanic. You know, well, he's kind of swarthy looking, so he must represent swarthy looking Americans. You know, we don't apply this to most other groups, but somehow to certain minority groups, you're chosen to be the voice of those people. Which is very much seeing us in this very collective, group-based way, and I think it's harmful to our national fabric. Then you have the guy named Richardson saying that the guy named Cruz isn't really Hispanic, and you can, you know, I think you just that the irony there speaks for itself. Thirdly, he says that he's anti-immigration, which is again horse pucky. He's completely pro-legal immigration. The whole issue is illegal immigration. The whole issue is this Gang of Eight bill that a lot of people point out. Look. There's nothing wrong with the goals of this bill. We'd all like to have some sort of resolution to a problem of illegal immigration. The problem is that most people don't really believe this bill is going to do it, and that this bill is going to actually probably either exacerbate the problem or create an amnesty or you know, one other problem or another. So the idea that this is some sort of, you know, nasty xenophobic act on the part of Cruz just doesn't hold water. Anybody who watched Bill Richardson in his 2008 presidential debate will not be stunned by gaffes and comments like this and things like that. So it's kind of what we've come to expect from Richardson. It does say something, though, that he does kind of believe that it's okay to basically declare Cruz is not Hispanic, or I suppose not authentically Hispanic, because as we all know, Richardson was elected the king of who is authenticity and ethnic identity, right? We all saw that election, right? Yeah. He has that power, you know.
If anybody can handle it, it's Ted Cruz, and the same thing has been said about Rubio, too. So, Jim, have a great start to the week. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Please join us again on Tuesday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.